All I can say to what some of us experienced with Carol Hinderle was wow. I really think I should quit everything I do and be a poster maker and follow Carol.
I mean there are
some posters here. I thought this was great. All the answers are not in. Is that great? Can you see that one going? That's really comforting. I don't play the piano, but I feel that if I knew how, I would play in between the keys. Because I know a lot of people who play the keys, and I somehow feel that I play in between them. And there isn't much playing space in there, and it's neither on or off key, and it's probably somewhere between doubt and faith, between belief and unbelief, sort of in the area of heresy, where I do most of my living. I don't know what it would be like not to be a heretic. I don't know what it would be like to be absolutely sure that all the answers were in or all the questions were out. I simply do not know. And I guess I live out my life in the dilemma. And that's why I find a lot of company. That's a confession of our faith. Yes, you may. It's all free. I don't even know where it came from, nor where it's going. And that's why I often think of speeches or lectures or however things get named and they get titled, that they have three dots at the beginning and they have three dots at the end of them. I simply abhor periods. I abhor most punctuation marks. I think that paragraphs ought to be illegal and that sentences don't exist. Grammar is the church's worst heresy. And prepositions, I think that Luther's in with and under was the beginning of a list. It might have been a list. But if it's the beginning or the middle, I would even say that it's the middle of a list. I would prefer not to think it's the beginning of the list. I think that Luther had a real tremendous sense of humor, and I think that somehow Dr. Frost is right when he says a theologian, that means anybody who doesn't smile, is a heretic. So I don't intend to be either serious or non-serious. Today I intend to be neither and both. I think last night was a little bit of an example to celebrate. I wanted a candle, but I didn't light the candle. A girl named Dawn lit the candle. I thought that was rather nice that she had a name. I didn't name her Dawn. She had been named Dawn before she came here. And it just happened by what I will call creative accident. In other words, you kind of look around for what is and go with it. Her name was Dawn. And when I heard her name was Dawn, I really wanted her to light the candle. And I told her that I'd sing the song, "You Are My Sunshine," if she wouldn't come. And I thought, well, I could have lit that candle myself, but to involve other persons and to engage them in your whatever you're doing in dialogic happening, I think is very important. Last night I wasn't trying to knock the preacher. I wasn't really trying to keep, to upstage the minister. I wasn't trying either to say that when ministers are gone, things get chaotic. I was really only saying that there is a liturgy which, when followed through the life of its people, takes us into their swimming pools, up their Ferris wheels, licking ice cream cones, etc., to which one in the Christian community can also pronounce the benediction. And that benediction really means, in the Christian community, all of life. Whether they're on the Ferris wheel, or whether they're marching with Bibles on their head, keeping everything straight and level, or whatever, it is our task, really, it's our privilege to affirm one another in all of life. It's a little, I have another one in the book, Uncovered Feelings, where they're popping popcorn, shooting cap guns, and singing Silent Night with one ear plugged. Now that got, you know, I have had many letters such as, surely that never happened, and I said, I hope so. You know, how do you answer a lot of letters like that? So you, what you do is you pass their question on to them. And keep the question open. There are so few questions anymore. So mostly everything is answered, and you can find books where you can find the answers, and I'm still trying to open some questions. Like, does God like rhythm? I know that church councils don't like dancing, but I'm trying to ask the question whether God likes rhythm. He still hasn't wiped out the seasons. Most of us have seasons. You can go where there aren't very many, but you ask the people, and that's God's country too. So there are a lot of questions that I'm trying to ask. Dolly always says that when she gets to heaven, she's going to ask God a major question. What is it, regarding mosquitoes, or what is it? Yeah. But I think it's fair enough to ask specific questions. Carol Hinderly keeps saying that we should be as particular as possible in the gospel. I have a book called I Think of Jesus, which is also a non-book. Most of my books are non-books. It makes guys like Paul Schreivogel and others whom some of you know very jealous and happy at the same time, because it affirms the fact that not every book, you know, is a real book like a novel or anything like that. It opens up books. We all carry books in our heads and our experiences, and all I'm trying to do is affirm all the authors in the world from whom I steal. I don't really steal, I just pick it up. They just drop it along the way or leave it somewhere and don't know where they, or that they even said it. And it's really wonderful to kind of be a scrounger. I'm kind of a hamster by nature. And I always got my jowls full. My jowls are here in my back pocket, where I just keep stuffing it in and munching on it. I really am surprised sometimes when I have classes that they don't write some of these exciting things down. Not the things that I say, but sometimes we hear them say some things that are so great. And I suggest this is a very confronting kind of thing. If someone says something and you like it, and you ask them to repeat it, and they don't remember it. So you tell them what they said, which is really something that they didn't think anyone was really listening. If they're just an ordinary student, a contramander, even a seminarian, a senior seminarian for that matter, can take himself pretty unseriously. And so you recite what he said, and he hears it back, and he does remember that he said it. He likes it. So then you have the whole class say it in unison, which is really exciting, because they have said Luther and Athanasius and all kinds of other guys in unison, but to say T. Johnson in unison is really almost too much for them. And the payoff is when you have them memorize it. And then working backwards from that forward, you can say something like, what have we just done? And what they have said is, we have just picked up another resource for the church. You know, someone said the other night about, I don't know whether it was a month ago or yesterday, I just kind of lose track of time. I don't know whether you, did you arrive yesterday or was it 3 weeks ago? I can't even tell anymore, the communities keep moving like this. But someone was challenging something, and then they asked, I don't know if they asked me, I know I said an answer. You know, how would you decide? And I said, oh yes, I know what it was. We ran out of communion on Christmas Eve at our communion service. That is, One of the many circles did not have wine. We ran out of wine, and so we had to borrow. So all I, since I was quarterbacking this one, and that's about what it was, I raised the serious question: is there anyone who has some leftover wine? And could you sip a little less so that we could have some over in this circle? Which was the embarrassment of being hungry and thirsty. And so there was a family in our, one of the many families in our community, that is a family of Christians, that really was in need of wine. So how do you, you know, what do you, and then some of us were concerned, what if there isn't any, what do we use? That very important question was raised. And I was asked then, the next day, under the tree, when we had to sort of square off on some of the implications of this unusual Christmas communion, which was more ordinary than and extraordinary than we had experienced sometimes. Where would you find out? What would you have done? And I said, I would have. Would you have used water? And I said, maybe. And they said, how would you have determined that? And I said, I would have asked the community. And I was challenged later on that I should have gone to the Bible. I said I would simply, and I don't like that word simply here, I would do what I think was the most significant thing of all, and that is all these people with a Bible in their heads and in their hearts and in their feet and in their hands, I would ask them, can we use water? I have no idea what they would have said. Perhaps under the circumstances they would have said something differently than if they sit here today with jugs of wine around and don't have to face the situation. Yeah.
In the ancient church, the term breaking of bread was frequently used for communion because the people were so poor they didn't have wine. Hmm. And only on rare occasions was the Lord's Supper celebrated with wine among the poor.
Now we have historical evidence.
No, I'm serious.
No, I'm serious too. Now we can't even guess.
I'm sorry.
No, you didn't hear a thing. You didn't hear a thing. I won't tell the people the next time. I'll have that in my hip pocket just in case. It was the same thing, something rather similar when some of us went up to northern Minnesota, and I'll make this story short because, I don't know, maybe some of you have heard it, but we went on a retreat which had to do with sexuality, and also I didn't know what that really was going to mean, except that we had 12 people, and divide 12 by 6, or 2, you've got 6, or by 6, you've got 2. Anyway, it came out even. And so as we were driving along, the two girls in the front seat with me said, let's have a play up there, and you can be Jesus. This embarrassed me because I didn't want to be Jesus. I would much prefer if one of the leaguers could have been Jesus, and I really was embarrassed that they would say, I should be Jesus. So I said, no, it takes two to be Jesus. Which was something I hadn't thought through at all, but it just kind of came to me, and I thought we would deal with it later. After I had said it, which is a marvelous thing, way to live. It's sort of say what comes to your mind and then deal with it. You think it through, you pretty much have, it's lost its life and lost the possibility of being wrong or very right. So we took the chance that this was a pretty good thing to say. We dealt with it quite a bit along the way and came up with scripture passages and everything that if someone's thirsty and I give them the drink, there am I. You know, so it does take two to be Jesus. So we liked what we had stumbled upon. What you stumble upon is really beautiful. What you know is there is pretty boring. And there's so much uncovered and undiscovered that I think to trip and to peek is also a hermeneutical style. That means it's a way to live out your Christian life. And I think to peek and to stumble and to sneak a look, to see a vista, to step to the side and see it just a little differently, and even to say what you see is very, very important. Well, I don't know where that was going, but it was going somewhere and I lost track of it, so we will come to where I am, and I am right here in any one of these places. I just take Thoreau. I like Thoreau. I meet him once in a while at places at Holden, where he says things like, at a certain season of our life, we are accustomed to consider every spot as a possible site of a house. I don't know how many houses Dolly and I have built here at Holden where we had said, especially on a walk to Copper Basin, wow, sort of a place to live. Man, if we could move here beside this big log and see it every day. This kind of wowness all along the way, and wanting to call a contractor who wouldn't bulldoze it out and could just kind of drop some living space in it. And then Thoreau goes on beautifully in a paragraph here and describes how he does this with 10 cents in his pocket. And I think that's classic, because, you know, you don't have to be rich or even go to the seminary or even graduate in order to do some of this wowness of owning the kingdom of heaven with 10 cents in your pocket. In fact, I think some of the wowness gets wowed and whammied out of it by graduate and postgraduate thinking. It gets back to this poverty program that he talks about here, and this poverty-stricken Thoreau. He says, my imagination in fact carried me so far that I even had the refusal of several farms that I wanted to buy. The refusal was all that I wanted, but I never got my fingers burned by any actual possession of these farms. And he had investigated farms within a radius of 10 or 15 miles to see which one he might live in. He says, the nearest that I came to actual possession was when I bought the Hollowell place and had begun to sort my seeds and collected materials with which to make a wheelbarrow to carry it on or off with. But before the owner gave me a deed of it, his wife, every man has such a wife, changed her mind and wished to keep the farm. So now he offered me $10 to release him of the purchase. Now, to speak the truth, I had only 10 cents in the world. And it surpassed my arithmetic at that time to tell if I was the man who had 10 cents, or if I was the man now who had the farm, or if I was the man who had $10, or if I perhaps was all of them together. However, I let him keep the $10, and the farm too, for I had carried it rather far enough. Or rather, to be generous, I sold him the farm for just what he had given for it, and as he was not a rich man, I made him a present of $10. And I still had 10 cents in my pocket. And seeds and materials for a wheelbarrow left over. And so I found that I had been a very rich man without any damage to my poverty. I think that's a fantastic way to live. To live out your life where you can go to heaven and back, etc. You know, as a child of God, with 10 cents in your pocket, and that's about all that most of us may have. And he said, but I retained the landscape, and I have since annually carried off with it, off what it yielded without a wheelbarrow. With respect to landscape, I, quote, I am monarch of all I survey. My right, there is none to dispute. So I go on trips like that too with 10 cents in my pocket. And I think that's kind of what being imaginative and being creative and being childlike is, to take a trip for nothing. I've taken a lot of them. Sometimes people say, how can you do that without dough? That's right. Markshausen was here from Seward, Nebraska, a fantastic clown. You know, if I were to have a church, I would fire the preacher and I would get a clown. I think that's about all he is, really, when he's in there anyway. And I would have a very, very funny man who wouldn't be afraid to fall off a high trapeze, and who would have a lady who would gets your attention to see him on the wire, and who could work with somebody in some of these acrobatic things. I would have a clown like Munchausen, who goes around operating off the truth chain. Munchausen found some pan that had pan on them, and he, by just blocking out a bit of the ace, says, "I am." Marvelous, marvelous cans called I Am cans all over. I am, I am. We had Bible verses all over the village from the hand cans called I Am. You know, and he sort of, it's sort of to look at a thing and see that you don't only, you don't have to start and start all over. You can take what's there and work with it. It's kind of the redemptive motif that you were talking about this morning. And it has to do with reclaiming, working with junk, working with stuff, working with junky people, junky stuff, junky iron, wood, whatnot, or things that people say, like, go fly a kite. That's an old way of saying something like scram, which is even older than going. These analogies, you know, these sayings get so updated all the time that you just have to have youth around, or, and I don't know, when our youth are out of the house, I think we'll have to get some new ones. I mean that. So I thought, oh, go fly a kite. Well, that's a fantastic thing to say. It's an awful thing to deal with. And it would be really great if these two people did. Fly a kite. You know, so you let these three categories come. I mean, I've got three lists going on. The statement, go fly a kite, which is a very hostile statement, which I want to deal with now in this little dialogue. And go fly a kite, which is simply a cliche. And go fly a kite, which you could actually do. I don't know. I recommend it, and some of my seminary students went out actually and flew kites with contramands. I think that's a great thing. They could learn a lot about the whole catechism by flying a kite to kids. Luther said, if you get one piece of the catechism all straight, you've got all parts straight. You go all the way with one. If you really know what the second commandment means, you've been in all the others. So I propose to fly a kite with all your might. Hey, how about that? I don't even have that good a line in this thing. So I guess there's like three dots at the end. It isn't even done. I could improve it. And very many of the people who read this kind of stuff say, you know, you forgot to say. And I say, that's fantastic. I did forget to say that, didn't I? Then you can say it. It's kind of open-ended, and I think that writing and speaking and living allows for spaces and open spaces where people can step in and say, here I am, instead of getting so crowded it jams them out. I think teaching should invite people in and not jam them out. I think architects, we've got John Sunshine, one of these days, we're going to just talk on education in terms of space, liturgy in terms of space, worship, the Christian life in terms of space. And maybe Don and I'll put on a little act here. Well, here's a little act. It says, go fly a kite. Okay, I will. Oh, I'm just kidding. Well, I told you I will. Oh, come on now. I'd like a little kite music to be that kite music. For kite sound. Could you get a kite feeling? But we'll wait till we get the kite up and it can hold a string. You know the feeling of a string of a kite that's really sailing? I don't mean the one that just keeps dipping down on the road. No, I know that feeling. But do you know the feeling of a kite that's really up there and you wonder if you're ever going to get a sound? And it's so high you kind of hope the string breaks in it. Or if you're almost going to run out of string. I don't know that feeling. You thought I did. I can only imagine that feeling by being with people who have had it. And you don't have, you know, you can. You can get so close to the people who've had it, you can just feel the tug of it. Anyway, well, here we go. Be a great thing to do with your church council sometime. Go and fly a kite.
Probably more productive.
Could be. Wow. And what would you make the kite out of? I sacrificed one. I tried it. In other words, go with your first thought. And when you're laughing real hard, you know, you think, what a stupid, silly thing. Underline it. It's probably close to where the truth is. You know, it really is the embarrassment. I think someone, this funny title for your book, Walt, what is it? That's so funny. There must be some truth in it. I'd buy it just for the title. I hope you've got wide margins and I rewrite it or rethink it. I think Carol Hinnerly should get out a book with one sentence on a page. That's all, you know, you can't get more than one sentence on his page. His sentence is so loud and it has so many implications that you put his sentence in the middle of a page, it fills the page with imagination. And to clutter it with another five sentences is truly to ruin it. And to try to get it into a paragraph is to put it into a coffin. Come to think of it, paragraphs are the shape of coffins. Well, I don't think we'll ever get to this one. I hadn't even intended to start with this one. We're never going to get to our lesson. All we're going to do is just sort of live together, and that's priority. I'm always in trouble when people say, well, what are you going to do? I don't know. Even in class. Go fly a kite. Okay, I will. Well, I'm just kidding. I told you I will. Oh, come now. Well, I'll make it myself. I'll fly my own kite. I didn't mean anything, you know, just an expression. Here, give me a newspaper and I'll make a real up-to-date kite. But I didn't finish reading it. Well, I'll take this big sheet and all the front page news, but that's the part I didn't read. Well, then read it while I work. Go ahead, read it. The war, the cartoons, the crash, the rocket, the election, the robbery, the march. Not so fast. Look, you folded this one in half and I wanted to read it. And I'll glue it to these sticks. This is a plenty grim reading here. Hold still, I'll bend this crossbow just like a bow, and then that'll put wind into this page. Careful, careful. That'll make all this front page news go and go and go. Can I help? Sure, if you want to help. This string goes right through here, right through the big O and the word rocket. I'll tie this knot, and then I'll fly my kite. Oh, come on, really. Ridiculous, I didn't mean it. It was a literal statement. You know, I was just kidding. Not for me. Here's 5,000 feet of string. Here you go. 1 mile of string, straight, white string. Are you angry? I feel the wind, wind, wind. Here it comes. Tell me, are you angry? I'm glad. Go, kite, go, fly, fly. Is it? It is. It is flying. Higher, kite, higher. The wind seems strong. The wind is strong. The string is strong. The news is strong and long. The feeling strong and long. And it goes. Here it comes, God. Come now. Don't take it out on God. Well, you don't understand. Here comes my war, God. My rocket, God. My new governor, my president, my enemies. Meaning what? Here comes my world, God. Take it. Oh, that tug on the string. Looks like fun. It's great to fly a kite, to fly the morning news before the face of the Lord God, and to set it floating tense and free and high before God's face. Oh, look, 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 Lord God Almighty. Look, look at the headlines. See every line and every word. It is my news. This is my world. Well, mine too. It is our world, Lord. There's a pivot. May I hold it? You must. I'm sorry, sorry. I said, no, don't be sorry. It is good that we can fly a kite. That's a stupid way to go with an old sentence like go fly a kite. Well, when you can't help it. I wasn't going to do this at all.
this afternoon, this evening, I'll go into the one that's speaking. But I had another one here that came to my mind as I was reading that one. I guess this is one I was headed for later, or earlier. Could have been later. I don't remember. Rhythm. Da da boom da boom da boom da boom. Now that is a very interesting word. These are two words called D A and D O O M. And I had never written words like this before, so I thought it would be fun to write words that might be hard to find. Well, boom, I suppose you could find in the dictionary. And da, if you look under baby talk. Now, so I had this little thing here, and John Reidman and I did it. It's on a record for World Review. John Reidman, this crazy guy, he would stay up like 26 hours in a row just to do these things. And he would do them in four or five voices, different voices, and fantastic. He was a man, a genius. And then when we get to the end, and each one of these has a little poster, I said to John, do it as a chant. And he did this thing, and I'll do it somewhat at a time. Da da boom da boom da boom boom boom. That's the meter. The one's the meter, the rhythm. I'm not hung up on meters, but I sure know it has a strong beat. Now, I've got two rhythms going. I've got, you know, mechanical. I guess I always wanted to play the drum, the saxophone, the piano, but I didn't want to pay the price of lessons. And as I recall, we didn't even have the price for lessons. Anyway, that was one list. And then all of the natural sounds, like, or, you know, the something of the heart. You know, the kind of thing, the skipping of rope. Well, I have these two things juxtaposed. A very interesting thing. When sermons are dull, just think of a list of musical instruments that you could use in a church. That makes it legitimate. And then some of the sounds that God has in his world. You get these things going alongside each other. And if the minister gives you some thinking space, like boring space, fine. Don't wipe them out for it. Thank him if he can give you something that gets you going. And you don't have to get every word in that whole hour. Okay. Da da boom da boom da boom boom boom. That's the meter. The what? The meter. The rhythm. I'm not up on meters, but I sure know it has a strong beat, like a heartbeat, like a drum, like clapping thunder, like Mexican castanets, like the rhythm of tidal waves, like the beat of a bass fiddle, like a jumping rope hitting the pavement. Can you hear it? Like feet tapping and hands beating the table, like a sax and a snare. You hear the beat in the sax and the fiddle, the castanet and the drum. You hear the beat in the jumping rope, thunder, tidal waves, and the heartbeat. You've got the rhythm of a song. I feel it. I've got the rhythm. Capture the meter of the clapping thunder. I will. I'll put it into captivity. Lock the thunder into the drum. Now, when Bill Klein plays the drum, he's simply releasing thunder. You know, you can lock the thunder into the drum and the clapping of the jumping rope on the hot pavement into the castanet. Where is the rhythm of the tidal wave? And what's the recording of the fiddle? The piano? The wind cutting all the corners of the houses and through the trees. The heartbeat? The metronome. It holds every sound to its meter. Who made the rhythm of the castanet and the clapping of the thunder? And who made the clapping of the hands and the deep inside unconscious feel of the beat? Answer, I did. When I made all things, I made them with a beat. With God. Amen. Now maybe we can get a little Genesis 1 music here. Okay, everyone? And when I come down like that, that means stop. And if you don't stop, that's all right. Okay? Means that we haven't had a choir rehearsal. This is for monotone. You don't know, you know, lots of ways to do it. What would a world be without rhythm? God made the world and he gave it a meter, a beat, a tempo, a rhythm. Feel the world. It has strong and silent rhythm The world is made to be seen and heard and felt. You have a choir of 500 without a rehearsal. Yeah. Well, I'll finish with this one. This is all out of World of Youth and called Computers. I went to see a computer one day, and I got one night with the Boy Scouts, and I got scared because they unlocked the door, let us in, locked the door behind us, and I thought, wow. I heard about computers. I couldn't make one, build one. I could build a Conferman and all kinds of things like that, but I could even write a catechism, but to look at a computer and then to play games and lose, it, and then it smarted off, it said, yeah, I won again, things like that. And I was up against it. I knew that I couldn't take it, and I left there, and I had to write this. Well, I didn't have to write this. I was surprised that I had written this. A little dialogue here. Circuit breaker, thermostat, bypass, low temp, high temp. Wow, how much did it cost? $30,000, and that includes everything. What is it? A big adding machine, a brain. Mr. Brain, tell me, who will marry me? Oh, no use. You can't talk it to it that way. It understands only ones and zeros. Its vocabulary is entirely in binary numbers. Hey, 1 1 0 0 1 0. Well, it might understand what you're saying, but you don't. That was a weird thing to think. Well, then someone will have to translate my vocabulary into zeros and ones, into light and no light. That was kind of a religious line. I thought if anyone wanted to see if this was a religious book, that would be light and darkness and things like that. We could punch holes and no holes into this tape. I can hear it. I can hear you through it. It can hear you through its photoelectric reader. Okay, well, let's sit down at this desk and get busy at the dashboard. Have a seat. You are now in the cockpit of the computer. This is where all the logic is. Boy, I've been in cockpits like that. Here we can tell it what to do. Okay, let's start easy. Tell me, Mr. Brain, what's 1 plus 1? No sweat. It can add 1 plus 1 3 million times in a row. How fast? In 1 second. Whee! Wow! How? Rydman really enjoyed those lines. The brain box, practically in your lap, in the desk. Look, it has more than 4,000 memory locations. A real brain, a moron, a high-speed moron, it can only do what you tell it to do. Oh, God, I wish I had a brain like that. It's an electronic puppet. It can only do what you tell it. Nothing else. Well, don't knock it. Brains are in. I built it. I programmed this brain. There are 29 in this building, and they're all alike. Alike? All alike. All like this one. I call it Adam. Old Adam. And that, to me, is one way of looking at the fall, the man. And then a little poster. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a power structure and to make men into high-speed morons. There is a temptation to wire the corpuscles and the molecules and brain cells of men into ones and zeros, into light and no light. But man is reaching to act, make, invent, build, do, change, envision, to comprehend, alter, and investigate, and instigate. Even in the very center.
Wow.
But this morning I am going to announce if you are counselors or pastors for youth.